Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking with Melissa Pierce. Her book is Filled with Gold, A Widow's Story. Widow, we haven't even seen that word around much these days, have we? Yet we always know that we carry around loss and grief, around losing a loved one, family member, child, husband, spouse, someone we call a significant other, family members, and we all seem as though we just have this big word, and it's almost like a scarlet letter. I've lost something. Something's not a part of me. I lost part of me that was all me. And how can I only be less than half now? And you always feel sheltered and shattered. What does it really mean to go through grief, loss, to lose someone that you dearly love, who you felt you were always walking hand in hand in life with, and being able to say, how can I start again? Well, today Melissa is going to be sharing her story. And again, her book is Filled with Gold, A Widow's Story. I really find it that sometimes we have to write down and reflect when we've lost someone to be able to see the story in a different light, to be able to put it down and make sure we don't lose any bits of it. You know, as time goes on, we say, I can't remember their eyes. I can't remember their face. I don't remember what they used to say. So many times we like to write it down so we'll have a history, a recording of our life with our loved ones. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Jeanette. I'm just really grateful to be here.
Oh, well, thank you. So, Melissa, don't you think that sometimes, you know, we all don't even use the word widow anymore. We just know, all we know is that we've got the big G stamped on our face, you know, or grief, you know, that's where you are and you're stuck, right? But
yeah, that word widow, I did not initially in the beginning of my journey and, you know, filling out doctor's forms at the doctor's office, and they have married, single, widow. And the first time I had to fill that out, I had to take a deep breath and kind of own it. Yes, I'm a widow now. I can't check that married box anymore. And I was young, too. I consider 44 young, being a widow. And so initially it didn't resonate with me too much, but now I'm owning it. You know, that's part of me. That's who I am. I'm a widow.
You know, I think a lot of times people have a loss and they sometimes it overconsumes them. Don't you think we see this where people lose so much of their identity they don't even know who they are anymore, yes?
Oh, yes. I mean, Dave and I were a team. We were, you know, married. We were best friends. We were parents to our two sons, whom we adopted through the Oregon foster care system in 2005. I mean, we were a partnership, and so much of who I was my partnership with him. So when he died so suddenly, I had to figure out, you know, who am I? Who's Melissa in this world? And that was a journey that I embarked on, and I'm still, you know, going through.
You know, I think to even find ourselves in the face of loss is sometimes we say, oh, but that was me, and we say that part of me died too. And many people live in that death phase where they can never seem to get out of it. You know, I think sometimes it seems to be so overconsuming, people end up ill. They end up losing the rest of their family. They tend to disconnect from others. They tend to say, my life is over and it'll never be whole again. Don't you think that sometimes we find people in those spaces and the journey back is sometimes just a great journey also, but it's not always easy, but it is kind of necessary.
Oh, yeah, it's totally necessary. And I can empathize with anybody who is kind of stuck there in that phase of just numbness and denial and like, what next? I was there for probably 6 months. I was just not feeling anything. I was kind of denying the feelings that I had, you know, the pain and the loss and the grief. And I just kind of went about my business. I took care of, you know, I got my kids up for school and made dinner and, you know, took care of all those, unfortunately, the paperwork that comes with the death of a partner, you know, getting our will done or getting my will done, which was not something that was in place. But I just kind of denied all my feelings and just kind of went about, you know, the day-to-day grind until I just was starting to unravel, because you can only push those feelings down so much. You can only deny the pain and the loss so much, and it will come find you. Grief will come find you, and
it does.
Will make you deal with it. And that's where I was about 6 months out.
Let's go back to the beginning. You really, you know, you were just getting your life together. You had just adopted your children, and everything seemed to be on a pinnacle. You know, sometimes, many times when they have a loss, people will say, I finally got to the pinnacle, and then it knocked out from under me. You know, but don't you think that in a way, getting to that pinnacle was also bringing you to a place where you had support, you had the children, you had a place where you felt you were going to be okay. You were also at a point where life is still going to be good. And I think so once you touch that and then you drastically lose it, you're on a path to be able to want to get it back. So how did you feel, do you think, when you got to that, in other words, as we say, the pinnacle? I mean, everybody's got one. I mean, I've got four kids, got to the pinnacle, got a degree, got to the pinnacle. You know what I mean? And then things come along and they say, well, you know, some people have said they've lost their houses, their homes, or their loved ones. And then they always were trying to, you know, say what was left there. And I think trying to always know that you could feel, in other words, you could feel good. Mm-hmm. The pinnacle is a place where you feel good. So you know what that feeling it feels like, and you want it back. If you've never really gotten there, many will say, I don't know what it means, so what are you trying to talk to me about? Can you share, you know, pretty much like when you had adopted your children and everything was going great, you know, what that felt like?
Yeah, so Dave and I were unable to have children biologically, so we decided to adopt older kids because we were, I think I was 38 at the time, and David just turned 40. So we decided to adopt older kids, and we adopted Brad and Bryce in 2005 from foster care. And, you know, they had experienced their own kind of early childhood traumas, but you know, in the 6 years that we were together as a tight little foursome, you know, Dave, myself, Brad, and Bryce, I think we worked through a lot of those challenges. And we were at a point in our lives where we had moved to a smaller town in eastern Oregon. We were very involved in the school. Dave was coaching. The boys were thriving. It was kind of an idyllic setting, and you know, in the mountains and playing in the snow and kind of this Norman Rockwell type of, you know, family. And then that was kind of the pinnacle, or that particular pinnacle. And then when Dave died, I kind of describe it as like the movie screen going blank. Like you have all these future ideas of what life is going to be like. You know, the kids are going to go to college. We're going to buy an RV and travel the country. And we had all these hopes and dreams. And then they all went away. The movie screen went black. And that was scary. But I did know what good felt like. So even in my depths of, you know, pain and that feral, you know, grief, I always had like this glimmer of hope because I always, you know, I had good things happen in my life. I knew that something good, or I could feel good again. I just didn't quite know how I could do that. And that's when I just kind of embarked on this journey of really tapping into my inner wisdom, my gut, I like to call it, and just kind of ask myself questions like, what do I need to do to kind of feel good in this moment, or maybe feel good next week? You know, what steps can I take to do that? And I did a lot.
And I think that's important, because if you've never actually felt the sun, you wouldn't know what the sun felt like. You know, you'd be on this constant quest, even though you had felt it, you just didn't know that that was it. So in other words, if you can feel and have that sense, then as you said, that is your core of your hope. And I really think that that's like almost like always that little candle inside that's always like lit, you know. There's always a glimmer. I can find that, you know. I'm okay. I can still love. I love now. I'm safe. You know, each day I can go on. And I think that's what gives you the stepping stone to go on. Sometimes when people say, when they lose someone, they let that light go out. And that's the problem, because they aren't able to get it lit back up. Don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, I think in those moments, or you can be stuck for years. And just in that, you know, life will not ever be like it was before, and that's true. That's something you have to work through. Life will never be the same as it was before, but you know what? Life can be super great, and you can thrive, and you can go after your dreams and have, you know, kind of start the movie up again. That movie screen that went blank, you can create a new movie. You can create a new life. It's just kind of difficult when you're not really feeling your feelings and moving through them and kind of and releasing those feelings. You have to feel them, you know, like I said, right. Grief and pain, they'll come find you. And if you stuff it down, you know, it's not good. You have to be able to help in a healthy way deal with that grief and pain. And that's just
well, I
so
think
important.
Grief and pain tend to get transformed into a medical condition, can end up as cancer, something debilitating. You can end up in a, you know, anger, violence. It can end up in so many different ways. It could end up in self-destructive behavior.
Sure.
And we don't even attribute it to this grief, yet it actually, if we think of life as just a line of experiences, you know, something had to bring you to there, you know. In other words, I can get to the store, but I have to pass the corner, you know. So somehow something brought you along the way. What was it? What was it that all of a sudden the color went out of the picture? And I think to find that and to be able to work through that is really what we're talking about today, is what do you do after a loss of a loved one? You know, and sudden or not sudden, you know, I work with end-of-life clients all the time. Right now I'm working with someone and she's sitting in the home. She has two people dying. You know, one is in hospice in her home and she's got another just a few miles away at the hospital dying. And it's very, if you see it and you're working through it, you say, I'm kind of numb from it. So don't you think going through the process, we're not asking you to come out on the other side. We're saying go through the process, and then eventually you start to pick up more of the pieces. So in other words, you don't always have to have hope within 5 days after, 10 days after, a week after. That might not even be possible, because then you're just losing out on the process altogether. In other words, I can't get to the store by missing the corner. I can't get to the store without losing the light in my picture. I can't get to the store without finding a different way to go because the road's out. Don't you think?
Yes. I mean, you have to deal with the pain and the grief. And you know, I was in denial for 6 months in the book. I knew that Dave had died. I saw his body. But in the back of my head, I was always thinking, like, you know, maybe he's just kind of on this long extended vacation. I kind of always expected him to kind of pop back into my life. Mm-hmm. And just really kind of dealing with the fact that, no, this is real. This really happened. And then I enlisted the help of a really great grief counselor. I needed some guidance, you know, through this process. I read books. I kind of embarked on this journey of Melissa 101, you know, let's get to know me so that I can take care of my kids. In a healthy way, too, because all three of us were grieving, not just all three of us, but extended family, friends,
right.
our community. So I just knew that in order for me to move myself and my sons forward and through this grief, I had to work on me first, kind of put myself first and get over the concept that it's selfish to kind of put myself first.
And
that was
something
I had to work through as well.
And don't you think also, too, is the idea of reaching out? Sometimes we can reach out and we can get help and support, and we say, well, I'll just speak to someone else who's in the same position. But then, of course, sometimes you end up in the same position. Sometimes
right.
reaching up and out for someone who can help guide you through the door might be a little bit more beneficial, you know, because, you know, sometimes you both might need that. So just as you did it for yourself, your children also needed help, and other people did too in the family, but each one had to find their own path. In other words, you can't always mix it together and just say, oh, we're going to be okay, and deny some of it, or say, well, let's just not talk about it, or let's talk about it and we'll be all right. You really do need that outside help, don't you think?
Yes. Yes. And I realized that around the 6 month mark, when I just, by denying my feelings, I felt nothing. Like and that scared me. That scared me because I didn't feel pain. I didn't feel grief. I felt no feelings. And that
mm-hmm.
really kind of jarred me into, like, this is not okay. I will not be a good mother or a good person if I don't start, you know, really dealing with what has happened. And
mm-hmm.
so I enlisted the help, the guidance of a grief counselor. She was fantastic. I also joined some groups because I had this issue about just really feeling alone. I felt like I was the only person in this universe
right.
that this had ever happened to, or was having, you know, the feelings or experiences that I did. And that's not true. So I just decided that I needed just to reach out however I could, find resources. And there are some really good books that I really enjoyed reading. But part of the reason why I decided to write my story is because nothing really resonated with me. There's a lot of faith-based books, which is great for some people, but that didn't really touch me as much. So
mm-hmm.
I thought that by writing the story down and getting it out, that it may touch somebody and resonate with them and maybe pull them through or help them feel not so alone in this, you know, in the grief and the pain.
Right. Well, you know, I think sometimes we see all these self-help books out there and they're like, do process one, do process two, do process three. And you say, but you don't understand, but you don't understand. You can't hear my heart. You can't hear my grief. You can't hear my soul. So how are you telling me to do one, two, three? And then you feel like, oh, I'm getting the answer right or I'm getting the answer wrong. And can you tell me how far I'm on my path now because I did all everything you told me to do? Doesn't that sound familiar?
Yes, it totally does. I mean, I kind of just wanted somebody to say, you know what, Melissa, you're normal. The feelings that you're having are totally understandable and normal. And I needed some validation that way. I didn't need steps. I didn't need, you know, do this to do this and then you'll feel better. Although I kind of, when I did embark on my journey with counseling, kind of one of my first questions to her was, okay, so how does this work? Like, when is this going to be over? When am I going to feel better? And kind of wanting a process. And she was great. She just kind of smiled and was like, yeah, that's just really not how this works. But if you do the work, you know, you will find this path to this life that you never dreamed of, and you will thrive. And I believed her, and I worked with her, and I also did a lot of my own work. Again, a lot of that was around just kind of letting go of some of the control issues I had. I mean, before Dave died, I was always somebody who was like, no, you know, I got this. I don't really need any help. I'm a strong person. I can do this all on my own. And for me back then, before he died, I always looked at like asking for help as kind of a sign of weakness, which I know now is not true. And that's something that I had to move through, and that I still do move through, that I really have no control over anything, and it is okay to ask for some guidance and ask the universe, ask people, ask friends, ask, you know, books, resources, you know, guides to help you. It's good. I've learned so much from everything that I've done these past 6 years.
And that's actually the experience along the way, because what you've done is, and you just kept going down the path. In other words, you go through life's experience. It isn't meant to be just a checklist. You know, you go down the bottom and then you get to the end and you're like, oh, good, I did everything I was supposed to do. See you later, you know, kind of idea. It's almost just to be about an experience. I think sometimes, too, we get stuck into the paradigm. If you lose someone when you're young, how can you go on with life? Or if you're elder and you lose someone, you're like, well, my life's done, see you later, and I'm just going to wait till it checks off. I think a lot of times the decade of life we're in does predict where you're going to be able to go next. Do you think?
Yes. I mean, I was 44, and, you know, I understand that in this experience of our life, everyone is going to die. But for me, being 44 and losing my partner and my husband, that doesn't follow kind of the natural order, like in our minds of, you know, we're supposed to be elderly and, you know, die peacefully in your sleep, or, you know, like have lived your life. So that did not follow in my mind the order of things. And that was the shock in itself. But maybe being in my 40s, I did see a future life because I had kids to raise. You know, my kids were only 10 and 13 when Dave died. So I knew that I needed to, I was still a mom, you know, at this point, and needed to, you know, still raise them. And I knew that there was just more life to be had. I just didn't know what that looked like. And although I was deeply, deeply sad, and I miss Dave, and we still talk. Anyway, we still have a conversation. Mm-hmm. That conversation didn't go away. But, yeah, being in my 40s, I do believe that I just thought, I don't know what the rest of my life is going to look like, but I know that I always won't feel this way. And I know that there is some kind of hope, and there is, my life is going to be different, and I'm just going to trust the work that I'm doing. Trust the people that I'm working with, trust the people that I've met, and just keep moving forward.
And I think it's also, too, the idea of sadness. Sadness is different than grief. Sadness, I think, is almost like a comfortable sweater that you wear all the time, and you just can't let it go. Grief might be something that you can walk through and potentially get to the other side. But sadness and... yeah, sadness just seems to be that. It's almost like it's, you can sense it when you walk into a room. You can feel it when you go out somewhere. It's like you carry it with you. It's almost like the salt that you put on your food. It always overshadows everything you do in your life. And I think sometimes sadness is like the dimmer on your candle. And sometimes when people say, well, I'm sad, and it's like, it's okay to be sad, but it's not potentially healthy to be sad all the time. In other words, you know, you could be sad in your home and be crying, but you could then walk outside and say, you know, I walked outside. I left my sadness in the chair. Now I'm going to go outside and look at the sun. I'm going to go get the mail. I'm going to go pick some flowers in my yard. And that shifts it. I think that light shift is what everybody can potentially hope for. And it's really all about action there, because you can't talk that one away. You can't,
right.
You can't, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you're going to get to number 5 and it's going to be gone. Sadness always seems to have a place in your life, but it doesn't have to be the life, yes?
Oh, that's so true. I mean, you just have to allow that sadness and allow yourself to, you can't use your head with sadness. You just have to feel it. I mean, it's almost like a body. It's in my body when I do feel sadness. But I also know that I'm not always going to feel sad. I need to move through it, or I'll just kind of allow myself to kind of be sad and cry if I need to, and then know that I can shift it, or it will shift. I will not always be in that state of sadness. But yes, I always have just little glimmers here and there, you know, particularly around this time of year, the holidays.
Right.
But yes, that's so true. I mean, it is kind of an action step you have to take. You have to acknowledge the sadness, feel it, let it move through you, and know that it's not always going to be there, and you can take some action to do something different when you have allowed that sad feeling.
And I think for a period of time, you can also honor the past, but it's also, too, about creating the future. You know, we always want to drag the past into the present, and then we ruminate on it and get stuck in it, and we can't even see or create a new memory. I always say that life's experiences, we're either recalling memories or we're creating new ones. So I think sometimes to find that balance where you are potentially going forward versus looking back all the time. And you could still always look back. I mean, Christmas time, who doesn't take out the ornaments? I know I do. You know,
right.
I have ornaments that are from the 50s. So, you know, don't we all do that? We all do. But also, too, then to plug in the lights and say, what's our hope for our next year? And it's to be able to go forward from that.
Yeah, that is so true. I mean, when you're talking about Christmas ornaments, I just remember, like, not wanting to do Christmas, like our first Christmas, and not wanting to take out the ornaments, not wanting to put the tree up. And yet my boys were the big catalyst in that, like, hey, when are we going to do this? Let's put up the tree. I mean, they were really a big force in the forward movement that I made and that we made. I kept telling them, hey, let's just go to Disneyland for Christmas. Let's just skip Christmas. And they kept plugging away. No, I want to be home. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that we used to do around Christmas.
Right.
And it was really beautiful because it allowed me to open up a discussion with them about, you know, what do we want, you know, our lives
mm-hmm.
to look like? You know, what do we want this movement to be? What do we want this forward movement to be, and we set up a beautiful little shelf in our home with the pieces that reminded us of Dave, and you know, we have that up and we always look at that, and we look at that fondly and we see it every day, yet we are forward moving. You know, we are living our lives and we're thriving, yet we always have these beautiful memories and this beautiful time that you know, the gift that we had of spending with Dave and the four of us as a family.
But also, too, the idea of, you know, when it comes to the holidays times, is that you don't always want to cheat out the children or other family members of creating their own new memories. In other words, you can't always, like you said, you know, oh, let's skip Christmas because you don't want to remember Christmas, because then they'll grow up and they'll say, oh, we never had one because mom didn't want to or the family member didn't want to anymore. You know, it's almost like then who has the control here, you know?
Right.
You can't have control over everyone's life. You have to allow each person to live through their lives. And that's kind of difficult sometimes to see, but it really is honoring everyone, being able to create, you know, what they want for their memories, right?
Yes, and I'm so glad that they, that was kind of like the first time in our experience that we truly got to, and it was like the first big holiday, which is always a trigger when you're, you know, when you've lost somebody in your first, you know, holiday. It's like, what does this look like? But I'm just so glad that they, you know, spoke up and we got to talk about what we want, you know, what things we want to bring from the past and what new things we want to do around the holidays. And it was a beautiful time, actually. I was really dreading that Christmas, but it ended up being a really nice time with the boys and I, and kind of creating our new normal.
So, Melissa, in closing, can you share where your life is now at and how you now honor the past?
Well, my new life now, the boys are older. Brad's in college, and Bryce is a senior in high school, so he'll be getting ready to go to college next year. I found love again, and I have a partnership in this life with a wonderful man named Sean who honors my relationship with Dave, and it's just something that I never thought would happen. And it did, and so we're all really thriving. I am a widow coach, and I really, really believe that some guidance during this process is so helpful, because you can get so stuck in, you know, not in just that sadness, that grief, and thinking that your life is over, and it's really not. Everybody has knowledge and wisdom and talents and experiences, and I really feel compelled to take this experience that I went through and share that with others and hopefully help them to move forward on their new path.
Right. Well, Melissa, it was such a wonderful story. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That'd be great.
Yes, I have my website, which is www.filledwithgold.org. You can reach me there, and I'd really love to hear from you.
Well, Melissa, it was such a pleasure. I think that what you've really done with this book is also to document everything down, so it seems like, you know how you say, I'm going to put all my feelings and all of my emotions and all of my thoughts and memories into a book, and then I'm going to be able to set it on the shelf so I can go on with life. And I really think that's what you did with this book. So it's such a wonderful book. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. I just really appreciate what you do, and thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, you're so welcome. If you'd like to find out more information about Melissa Pierce, again, her book is Filled with Gold, A Widow's Story. Please do check out the link on the bottom of today's show page, and it'll go directly to her website. And if you have a story to tell, it's always about sharing it with someone who will be able to lift you up, who will be able to help you expand, to help you comfort you, but also, too, to be able to see or hear or listen or be engaged with you. Sometimes we all know that we want to something to share, and the people just aren't receptive, or we share and we feel left out, and that just keeps us in a space of grief or loss or sadness. Find what you need. Find someone else to share. If you don't find the right person, go on to the next. Do you know how many people there are on this earth? There's the internet these days, social media. Reach out. There are many, many people. So thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.